For as long as I can remember, whenever I have heard this parable of the rich fool, I've thought of Monty Python. Bear with me. Listen to the words here, and imagine John Cleese being the speaker. So, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. You can just see him being pompous and self-satisfied and pleased and a little bit ridiculous. And then Eric Idle appears on the scene and says, "You fool! This very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be?" Acted out the right way, this parable has tremendous comedic potential. But we know that the Gospels were not written to give us a laugh, but instead were meant to share the good news. And indeed, often were meant to surprise us and always meant to lead us in a new direction. There's something serious going on here. The story is not meant to be a punchline. Consider some of the elements of today's lesson, some of the things that stand out and grab our attention. First, we have this disgruntled heir. Now, he's not happy with what's going on with the family estate, and he wants his fair share. So he does what people traditionally did in that day and time. He went and found a teacher or a rabbi who could serve as an arbitrator. But Jesus isn't interested in playing that role. So not only does this guy not get the resolution he's looking for, but instead he gets a lesson. He's told not to be greedy. And then, as if that's not enough, then he gets the parable. Now, Jesus is somewhat sharp here and a bit caustic with this story. And one of the things that makes this parable stand out, and here's a little bit of Bible trivia that you can store away for use at cocktail parties, is this is the only parable in which God appears as a character. The only one. Surely, the message that Luke is sharing here must have meant a lot to him. Surely, he wanted people to pay attention. So what's so important? What is it that Luke believes we need to hear and understand? Well, some commentators have suggested that we should read this story allegorically, that the parable is really about Israel, or maybe it's about the kingdom that has not yet been realized. But there's really no reason to interpret the story that way. Unless there's something going on here that makes us uncomfortable. Sometimes, I don't know about you, but I know I've done this, if I don't like a problem or a situation, I try to redefine it. Because then I can look at things differently and have a better chance of coming to an answer that I find to be more congenial. I think we're supposed to take this parable at face value. We are not supposed to be worrying about our stuff. It's that simple. Now, that's an easy message to preach, and it's one that we can share with one another. But when we start spending some time with that lesson, the odds are we're going to get a little uncomfortable. There's a reason that one of the commentaries I consulted before today's lesson noted that this is one of the Sundays when ministers often hand the preaching assignment over to a supply preacher or a student intern. Because we don't want to confront our relationship with money and things. And yes, it's easy enough perhaps to say, well, I don't have so much stuff that I need to go and build a new warehouse. This lesson's clearly targeted at the 1%. But who here doesn't have a thing that he or she treasures? Our stuff is important to us. We invest it with meaning. And that's understandable. But what Jesus does not want us to do with our stuff or our money is to make an idol of it. We should not assume that these things are going to save us. And yet, not just in 21st century America, but throughout human history, people have lived their lives as if money and wealth and objects and things could provide salvation. But when we begin to lead our lives that way, then rather than having our things be useful to us, we become their servants. Think about this rich fool. He thinks he's got it made in the shade. He's all set. If you listen closely, he hasn't done anything to enjoy his good fortune. Luke mentions nothing about him being some brilliant farmer using wonderful agricultural techniques. He just happened to have a good harvest. And it doesn't occur to him, well, maybe he should sell the surplus or give some of it away. No, instead he's going to tear down his barns and build new ones because he knows that he's got a long future ahead of him and he could eat and drink and be merry. And unfortunately, he doesn't know Isaiah 22. Because there he would have read, "Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die." Live it up today, because tonight your ticket may be punched. We like to tell ourselves that we are in control, that we are fully in charge of our destinies. But one of the lessons of Scripture and one of the lessons that Jesus wanted us to understand was that our lives are contingent. And they are finite, and they will end. And they are a gift from God that we should treasure and use wisely. Imagine today is the last day you have on earth. Admittedly, not the most cheerful prospect. But what if that were the case? What would you do with these final hours? Who would you call or visit? What experience would you want to relive? Who would you go and help? How would you pray to God? My suspicion is that people here would be thoughtful and wise about how they use these final hours. This is how we are called to live our lives. We are called as followers of Jesus Christ to share the good news, to turn to God, to focus on what really matters. All that stuff we have, the retirement accounts, the tchotchkes, it's a cliche, but it's true. We can't take it with us. The coffin doesn't have a luggage rack. But we can leave behind examples of faithfulness and service and kindness and love that can inspire others. And if we lead our lives following Jesus, caring for his people, praising God, then we will not lead our lives as if we were a punchline. but instead we will lead lives of purpose. Lives in which we grow closer to God and God's people. Lives in which we are truly rich.